Oh. Oh, I can hardly believe it. Little me in the King's Arms.
Well, it's the best boozer in town.
With all those beautiful ladies in there, why on earth did you pick on me?
Well, it was a couple of things, I suppose.
Oh, Madge, you're only after one thing.
Why, what's the matter with the other one?
I know you'll think I'm an awfully silly girl, but I've lost my pussy. The name's Fluff.
Oh, I'm so sorry, Miss Fluff.
It's the cat's name.
The cat's name. So sorry, silly me.
Ladies and gentlemen, hark. Yeah, no, hearken. Listen, hearken, hark ever so ken. Yes.
No, it's not Miss Lambert.
Saucy, cheeky, and fun-loving. Just three phrases from my Lonely Hearts advertisement. But meanwhile, on British cinema screens, something was happening. A group of people were doing it. And they'd been doing it for years.
You better call in at Mrs. Bottomley at number 24. She's complaining about suspicious activities in the rear of her premises.
Yes, Sergeant.
You're late, Constable.
Yes, Sergeant.
Why?
We had a bit of trouble with the shower.
Looks like I'm going to have a bit of trouble with a shower too, doesn't it?
Oh, Price's innuendo, how witty.
Quiet, Gorse.
This sort of thing could ruin my training program.
Oh, forget about that, can you?
I can't forget it. It's my duty to keep myself fit and strong. You may not realise it, but I was once a week man.
Once a week's enough for any man.
Hello. I'm Leslie Phillips, and you're listening to Carry On Forever on BBC Radio 2.
How do you do?
So pleased to meet you.
Miss Alcock.
Mr. Gregg.
Are you satisfied with your equipment, Miss Alcock?
Well, I've had no complaints so far. equipment. Yes, I have everything I need, thank you.
Do you find mental relaxation follows physical activity?
Oh, always.
Splendid. That's all. Thank you.
In this second program, we'll be looking at the 1970s carry-on films, the spin-offs, and the movies that were never made.
And we'll be talking about me. Yes, I was the biggest star of them all, you know. Huge, I was. Oh, I was huge, yes. Well, get on with it then.
Thank you. Where was I? Ah, yes. The Carry-Ons are a British success story, and a success story that made a lot of money. Not that you'd have guessed if you were working on the films, as 1970s carry-on star Jackie Piper recalls.
They were absolutely made on a shoestring, and the first one I did, I was living in a flat in Belsize Park at the time, and I didn't drive, I didn't have a car or anything. And I said to Peter, can I have a car? Because filming started so early, public transport wasn't running when I had to be down at Pinewood. Well, he nearly fell off his chair. I mean, it's amazing I carried on working for him so long. He nearly had a heart attack. And he said, nobody gets cars. He said, well, he said, you can have a car, Jackie. You can have a car, but no salary. Or you can have a salary, but no car. Well, as I barely got enough to pay the milk bill, there wasn't really much competition there. So he said, there's no star system here. I said, I know, I just need to get to the studio. So anyway, what happened was I took a bed and breakfast in Slough for the duration of Karen Up the Jungle and was able to afford a cab from Slough to the studio.
I've heard it said that I made cheap pictures. I made economical pictures. And they were professionally made by the best people in the business. I paid top rates for everybody, cameraman, technicians, the whole lot.
I was very fond of Peter Rogers, but he was so bloody mean. Masses of things were coming my way. So I just said, I don't really want to go on doing these. Anyway, he said, well, will you do another one? So I said, oh, yeah, all right, which one? Constable. So I said, yes, okay. So that was number two. Then Peter said, you'll do one more, won't you? Yeah, I said, yeah, okay, I'll do, what was it? And I read it, and it was teacher. So off we went again. Then I noticed a big change of heart, because Carry On Nurse had now opened, and it had opened in America, and it was an unusual smash hit. And so Peter came up and said, well, you'll do some more, won't you? And I said, no. What's the situation over the money? He said, well, we won't talk about this now, he said. And, of course, what had happened, when it opened in America, it took a fortune. And it took so much money that it was embarrassing. And Peter never mentioned it again. So I was off. What he did say, he said, well, if you don't do it, he said, I'll get Ian Carmichael. I said, oh, really? I said, well, give him my love, I said.
The shadow of a Carry-On has always been, retrospectively, the money side of it.
Author of numerous Carry-On books, Robert Ross.
Now, Peter Rogers, who I knew very well, always maintained that in the very early days, around about sort of film 3 or 4, he wrote a list of people called, it was headed the Carry, I've never seen this list, by the way, called the Carry-On Team. He wrote this list. Kenneth Williams, Terence Longdon, Bill Owen, Charles Hawtrey, Kenneth Connor, Leslie Phillips, Joan Sims. That was the official Carry-On Team. He offered them a percentage of the films for a cut in their fees, to get like a percentage, 1 or 2% of the gross of the movie.
I think it was after Nurse, I said, in order to keep costs down, it would be a good idea if we created a commonwealth, then you all took a percentage in the profits. And they all said no. It was only Kenneth Williams, many years later, who said it was the greatest mistake they'd made.
Now, having spoken to people like Joan Sims and Leslie Phillips and Bill Owen over the years, they never heard that at all. He went to the agents, Peter Rogers, and said, look, this is the deal. And they said, no, I'm sorry, we'd rather have the full, you know, amount, because there's no guarantee. The film could sink without trace. Who knows? But I've never seen any paperwork at all about to that effect of him writing to the agents. So I don't know. It's unlikely, I think, for that time, for the late 50s, for actors to be offered any sort of deal is unlikely, particularly films which were, you know, made on the cheap and not expected to make much money back. So I think he basically got to the point where he had these actors under the cosh, as it were, and the Joan Sims and Barbara Windsor were getting $3,500, the Sid James and Kenneth Williams were getting $5,000, and that stayed the same for 20 years, pretty much. But, you know, they could have said no to it. They could have said, look, I'm sorry, unless you pay me more money, I won't do it. And some did do that, and they were recast.
People in our business, we didn't get paid the monies that people are getting paid nowadays. Georgie Best didn't get paid what David Beckham gets paid. It was part of that time.
Anita Harris.
Look, I'm not being silly. It would have been wonderful if we all got paid a bit more, you know. But what came out was a lot more than payment in money. What came out of those movies were legends, longevity of workload, of being part of something that is British heritage.
One thing that's not in doubt, though, the British public couldn't get enough of the Carry-Ons.
If you fancy it, that's understood. And suppose it makes you fat, I don't worry over that, 'cause a little of what you fancy does you good. I never was the one to go and sit myself.
Well, I don't know, you know, if I kept a sweet shop and someone came in every week for licorice all sorts, and I said, don't have those, dear, have these fancy chocolates from France or Belgium or somewhere, and they took them away, they wouldn't come back again. They'd go somewhere else for their licorice all sorts, but they'd still want licorice all sorts. I think give people what they want. They're always true, you know. They're very nice people, the public. Very loyal indeed.
There was a growing feeling among the critics, though, that the quality of these films was declining.
Yes, a bit like this script, mate. God help us.
When they started, you know, there was a lot of adverse criticism, and people said, very rude, can't take a child to see, and people were moaning about the fact that, you know, family entertainment was being misused, that it wasn't truly family entertainment if you take something which you were frightened about your child seeing, whereas now, carry-ons are regarded as really so harmless, it's not true.
Permission to carry on, sir. Please do.
The pivotal moment in Carry On is when Barbara Windsor's bra pings off in Carry On Camping. You know, a whole generation of adolescents have that seared in their memory banks forever. Bare breasts are on display for the first time. They're not just hinted at and snickered about, they're actually on there, you know. So that was a wobble forward, as it were, in sort of suggestiveness. And after that, it was pretty much, you know, prerequisite to have something flashed. It got saucier and saucier, but then so did life get saucier, you know. I mean, the 1950s were quite a staid time, but by 1971, 72, you know, you had the pill could be discussed and contraceptive could be discussed openly on television, and you know, the first use of the F-word had been on TV. So, you know, language had gone on a bit. I mean, it wasn't our grandparents' time anymore. It was the youth had taken over in a way, you know, post-Beatles, post-Philip Larkin, whatever. It had become a much more sort of open-minded society.
Here's Steve Gerrard, a lecturer in film and media studies at Lampeter University.
Once the gates are open, you want to go that little bit further. Now, when it came to 1976 with Carry On England, they ran into major problems with the censor, and they filmed whole sequences where the women were topless.
No, it's done this in a bell.
In this, it's set in an army barracks in the 1940s. And they seem so out of place, totally incongruous with what it was known and loved by the audience.
Here's 70s Carry On regular, Valerie Leon.
I think that the sexual humour in the Carry On films became more pronounced because I think it was probably an attempt to bring in a different audience. I think they lost a lot of the family audience to television programmes, and they had to move with the times.
With that, then, of course, the jokes become a little bit bluer, a little bit more rude. But this was in a gentle way. Of course, censorship was eroding at the time as well. In 1972, you had a movie like Last Tango in Paris with this infamous sex scene in that. The Carry On movies tried to stay away from it, to try to keep on the right side of the censor, as it were. But of course, times were changing. There was a not a decline in censorship, but they were more open to ideas of what could be shown.
We knew in those days where you could go. We knew how far, instinctively, we knew that you didn't go over the line.
Kenneth Cope.
Carry On, I always went near the knuckle, but it was acceptable because it was good old British humour. And people knew, like the double entendres and stuff with the postcards, the double meaning, or the twisted things. You accepted them. You laughed at the ladies with the big bums or whatever, and the bras and all the rest of it. You accepted it all.
I think that the broad stream of English humour, running from Chaucer through Shakespeare to, if you like, the McGill dirty postcard, is something which is very, very much a part of English culture. And I don't look upon the humour, which is ostensibly rude, vulgar, lewd, obscene, I don't look upon that as evil. I look upon it as a safety valve. I think there is much in modern men's lives, indeed in all of life, that is very frightening. And every now and again, you very much need the sort of safety valve that laughter supplies.
I don't want to hear of any unnecessariness when my Joan gets back.
Unnecessariness?
You know what I mean.
What makes you think that's unnecessary?
It's no laughing matter. They might think your intentions are honourable, but personally, I've got sore misgivings.
You want to put some talcum powder on them.
But did the films ever reflect the society that made them?
Now, you lads are in uniform for the first time, and I think you'll all agree with me that you don't yet look like soldiers. It would be stupid of me to expect that.
It would that. He's very fair.
Private Golightly, you're not to talk when you're on parade. It's not the custom. Now, where was I? What was I saying?
How stupid you are.
I think, as a nation, we're always very self-critical of ourselves, but often in a fun way. And so by movies such as Carry On Up the Khyber, which looks at faded notions of a crumbling British Empire, admittedly it is also a spoof of things like Zulu, you can begin to see that they're reflecting what's going on. And we like that. We like to look at ourselves, but not for any of the good things that we can produce, but the flaws that we produce as well.
Carry On at Your Convenience was me as a shop steward getting everybody out on strike. And that, I'm afraid, was going on an awful lot in real life with the British people. And I think they can sit there and they could identify with it and sort of say, yeah, you know. And I was playing a stereotype of a quick talking. We had his union, the nookie book he had in his back pocket as the sort of expander, the union guy. I think people could identify with what's going on. You know, it was bawdy satire.
With the original team beginning to age, a new wave of performers were brought in to play the younger characters.
Sheik, it's a disgrace, it really is. I was like a spring lamb, I was. Oh, I was your actual Dorian Gray.
The star of the film is the title Carry On. You can put anybody in it. Father Christmas in it.
Peter Rogers, series producer.
It wasn't a question of using the same ones every time. If someone wasn't available, we changed. I mean, Leslie Phillips wasn't in all of them. A lot of people think he was.
No, Peter, I wasn't. Here's 70s Carry On regular, Kenneth Cope.
What happened in those days when Peter Rogers, the producer, and other people involved in Carry On films, they've, you know, invited people who were sort of having some sort of success on telly or whatever. I was doing Coronation Street and TW3 at the time, and I had a sort of funny background. And I think that was the reason they thought, because if you're on telly, people would go and see you in the cinema, and they'd put some bums on seats and things like that. I think that was the thinking behind it.
In 1969, Peter Rogers cast the young Jackie Piper in Carry On Up the Jungle.
Oh, I wasn't even in that one. Oh, it's a disgrace. It really is a disgrace. Yes, well, I was, mate, so shut your face and let them get on with it. Good.
I was very, very lucky girl because I did the first Carry On film as Jungle Girl in Carry On Up the Jungle. And after that, he very sweetly wrote to my agent and offered to put me under contract for another 2 years to carry on films a year with sort of rising salary. It wasn't a huge amount, I have to say, but to a young girl of 22, to know you were working for the next 2 years was unbelievable. My agent always said it was the simplest contract he ever had to deal with. It was just... And Peter always, you know, did say that he'd never done that for anyone else. So I was very, very lucky. Because I was the new girl on the block. They were all lovely to me. And, of course, I hadn't heard any of their funny stories before. So I just sat there listening to all these people telling me the stories, especially Kenny Williams, as you can imagine.
The biggest part in that film was Terry Scott's.
Of course, the reward and the warmth is so enormous. Not from everybody. I mean, I must tell you a story, for instance, of travelling on a train from London to Guildford, and a gentleman in the buffet car, very wealthy, with a glass in his hand. He said, I saw you, and he said this not once, but 8 times. He said, I saw you on Carrying Up the Jungle. Very funny. You made me laugh. I've always hated you, you know. Never liked you. Never. But you made me laugh in that film. Isn't it funny that I've always hated you? Never liked you. Never. But you made me laugh. And I thought, I said, well, I'll do the best I can.
And after Sterling's service in Carry On Camping, Valerie Leon was given a bigger part to play in Up the Jungle.
Carry On Up the Jungle, recorded in the studio, when I think it's well known that the Carry On films did not go to exotic locations. And the furthest I ever got, actually, on location was Marylebone High Street in Carry On Girls. Some of them, I believe, got to Brighton and possibly Wales in Khyber. But so they were hardly going to take us off to the jungle.
The old guard was still firmly in place, however, including Bernard Breslau.
He was known as the gentle giant. Very, very fine actor. And someone I'd call a sort of noble person. He had a great sense of humour, but he was a really noble... He was a really good, lovely person, actually.
I dreamt about you last night, nurse.
Did you?
No, you wouldn't let me.
Bernard's characters in Carry On fall into two distinct categories. If it was a contemporary set film, he tended to play that sort of I-only-asked character from the Army game, the sort of the brain-dead sort of idiot friend of Sid James. In the historical ones, you played usually the sort of snarling, you know, be it Arab chiefs or, you know, Bungdit Din, the Indian warrior. He played these real sort of, like, you know, scenery-ripping characters. Trained at the Royal Academy of Dramatic Art, was a really good actor, you know, plays Shakespeare and all that, you know, all the classics. My image of Bernard is him just with his scimitar in his hand and up the Khyber running around the Welsh mountains, like snarling at the British, and that's just the image I have of him.
Despite changes to the team and the broadening of the humour, the franchise was still in very good shape, good enough to consider a move into TV shows and other media.
I did one of the Carry On Christmas specials in 1972. It was called Carry On Christmas, also known as Carry On Stuffing.
Valerie Leon.
And I was a serving wench, and I was continually caught in compromising positions with... was it Peter Butterworth and one of the other cast members?
In 1975, Peter did a deal with ATV to do a series called Carry On Laughing. Not the compilation, that was another series in the 80s, but a self-contained sort of half-hour sitcom series, largely written by Dave Freeman, who wrote Carry On Behind and later Carry On Columbus. And a lot of the fans don't like them. I think they're quite fun. I mean, for what they are, they look cheap, actually. If you look at them compared to the films, they look really quite tatty. But you have people like Sid James in them and Hattie Jakes is in one, and Jack Douglas is sublime in them. They're good. They're good part of that whole sort of the Carry On franchise. And the fact they were being made for television just shows how sort of far-reaching the whole Carry On feel was at that time. So 1975 was the year of Carry On. There was 13 half hours plus a film.
Those spin-offs often saw bigger roles going to some of those newer members of the team, such as the ever-twitching Jack Douglas.
Jack Douglas was a sort of vaudeville, you know, variety clown comedian. Started out as a straight man, but then became a comic and invented this Alf Hippopotamus character, which was jerking character. And from nearly all his Carry On contributions, played that character and brilliantly, actually. I mean, he was a really good, iconic comedy creation. And Jack. Became the saviour of the last few years of Carry On, really. He was the only one. In fact, the only actor, little known fact here, the only actor who, once he joined the films, never missed a film. Once he was in one, he was in them all.
Carry On stars were also up for doing it live.
The ceiling may leak, the floorboards may creak, there's a door hanging off of the sideboard. There's a window or two where the wind whistles through, so we had to fill them up with cardboard.
But in our house, there's a little love in every corner.
Carry On London was in 1973. Basically, it was discussed for a while about doing a live stage show.
Robert Ross.
And when it came about, I don't think anybody was particularly happy with how it came about, but it fundamentally became a show of skits and sketches and songs and variety acts and speciality acts and things like that. But it starred the core team. Sid James headlined, Kenneth Connor, Peter Butterworth, Bernard Breslau, Barbara Windsor and Jack Douglas. So it was a good old team of people there.
So tell me, what can we do but form a bleeding great queue on the landing? And when there's a rush, the damn
It ran for 18 months. It opened in Birmingham as a sort of tryout, and then came to the Victoria Palace, which had been long traditionally the home of the Crazy Gang, so they had that sort of tradition of wacky comedy. The franchise of Carry On, you know, it was suddenly film and TV and stage. It was taking over multimedia.
One day, the council said they had to build a runway. They handed me the papers and said we'd have to go. What if they know about us? There's a little love in every call.
One of the great things about the Carry On films is that because they are films that tend to be on location, the scenes don't last too long. They move along pretty swiftly.
Actor and Carry On fan, David Benson.
On stage, a situation has to be developed on the same set and through longer conversations. So naturally, the tone and style is going to be different on stage. Having said that, I would imagine that it must have been pretty riotous to be in an audience and see Barbara Windsor and all the others, Bernard Breslau and Kenneth Connor and people coming out and playing those old characters, because then you would get that wonderful immediate response that you get from a live audience. And of course, audiences who know the characters and their styles and the actors in the stars very well indeed. So I should think it must have been absolutely thrilling to see them live, and I wish I had.
Less successful was a thing called Carry On Laughing, which was a straight sort of comedy play written by Sam Cree. Headlining Jack Douglas, featuring Liz Fraser, Peter Butterworth and Kenneth Connor. Then something weird happened. They did the compilation film, that's Carry On, which was about 5 pence to make and made a few quid back.
I'll get on with it.
You know, that was it for Carry On. You know, people started to die and comedy changed. You know, the young ones came in and Monty Python were doing their movies and slightly, and then the Carry-Ons became this sort of bizarre cult thing with the youngsters, including me, and Frankie Howard was raised to the nobility of comedy, and something happened that the Carry-Ons became cool and part of our culture.
What about me? I'm still here, you know.
And at the same time, they did the stage show, which was written by Dick Vosburgh and Barry Cryer, called What a Carry-On in Blackpool. They couldn't call it Carry-On anything, because that's sort of licensed and stuff, but What a Carry-On in Blackpool they could get away with.
Ooh,
and that starred Bernard Breslau and Barbara Windsor. And I saw that play, it was a review again, actually. It was sketches and songs and things. It was, oh, God, it was amazing. You know, at the end of Blackpool Pier, you could sort of, you know, eat candy floss and ride on a merry-go-round and watch Bernard Breslau and Barbara Windsor on the same day. It's brilliant. And I remember Bernard doing, he played the Frankenstein monster, a part he was up for the film, the Hammer film. And he came out and did this lumbering thing. And then suddenly he reaches behind him and he brings out this ukulele and starts doing a George Formby monster. It was sublime and surreal and ridiculous, but I loved it. It was great fun.
You're listening to Carry On Forever on BBC Radio 2.
So pay attention. I might be on again in a minute, yes.
Meanwhile, on the big screen, the films went on and on. Henry VIII and Dick Turpin were there to receive the 70s Carry On treatment. Alongside the NHS again, in Matron, and the Armed Forces again in England. Long-term writer Talbot Rothwell left the fold after Sid James's last Carry On Dick. The series continued with other writers, but the style seemed to become broader and less innocent.
Aircraft recognition. These is your new pin-ups. I bet none of you can tell the difference between a couple of Heinkels and a pair of Bristols.
Now,
But I can recognise a fucker when I see one.
In 1978, the last regular film arrived in the shape of Carry On, Emmanuel.
There's a woman in my life who doesn't care for a thing. She don't want to go out dancing, she just loves to stay in. She just cares about good love and never leaves me alone. If I'm not prepared for action, she goes out on her own. The woman is love crazy, she's loving all.
They lost the Carry On feel.
Jack Douglas.
If something is funny and it goes well, don't change it. They did. Carry On Emmanuel went too far, right? Carry On England went too far. It wasn't basic enough, and that was the secret of the Carry On comedy.
Peter Rogers always said that once the film stopped making money, he'd stop making them. And Emmanuel was the last production for over 10 years.
Oh, dark, invidious muse that blights my life. Come, show your fearful, haggish face.
Yes?
Oh, not you. What do you want?
Well, I thought you'd like to know. There's another strike on.
Not another one. Who is it this time?
The eunuchs.
The eunuchs? For heaven's sake, what are they striking for?
They're complaining about loss of assets.
But that doesn't mean that plans weren't afoot for more during those wilderness years.
Once they made Carry On Emmanuel in 1978, which was the most expensive film of the whole series up to that point, it was £320,000, I think, off the top of my head. There were plans for another film around that time called Carry On Again, Nurse. And they also were talking about bringing Charles Hawtrey back for that. But that didn't happen purely because Emmanuel lost a lot of money. So that was that. And then in 79, Peter Butterworth died. So Sid died in 76, Peter died in 79, Hattie died in 1980. Now, before Hattie died, about a month before Hattie died, they announced another one called Carry On Down Under, which Hattie was going to be in, and that just folded up too. And then years and years went by, and they always mentioned certain things, like Carry On Dallas was discussed in the late 70s, early 80s as well. None of them were made.
It wasn't until 1992 that another Carry On film made it to our cinema screens.
Yeah, old God help us, they're at it again.
Whatever you're looking for, you won't find it down there. Columbus.
It just was not a Carry On as people remembered the Carry Ons.
Valerie Leon.
And despite all the wonderful people in it, it was not a success.
Carry On Columbus featured just a handful of actors from the original films, such as, well, me, for instance. Plus Bernard Cribbins and, of course, lovely June Whitfield and John Pertwee.
My wife rang me and she said, I've got great news for you, your agent has rung. And she knew that I was very keen on Depardieu and he was doing the Columbus film. And so she rang up and said, I've got great news, your agent rang and they've got you a lovely cameo role in Columbus. And I said, oh, that's wonderful, good. They said, they're sending you the script and you can read it tomorrow morning. And so the next day I was waiting at the top of the stairs for the postman to come and there was a bonk and I rushed downstairs, picked up the script, opened it up and it was Carry On Columbus. I nearly died. I can't believe this.
When the tea trolley came round on set, we all had to pay for our tea and our buns.
Writer John Antrobus.
I've been in a few films in my time, but I've never had to pay, you know, when they have a tea break, I've never had to pay before for the tea and the buns. But I'm sure Peter knew what he was doing, because he did keep things going. That was the main thing.
The producers also recruited a number of alternative comedians. Here's Julian Clary.
Julian who? Never heard of him.
I really had a lovely time making it. They used to pick us up in a minibus at 6 o'clock. And we'd go to Pinewood. And I'd only just started out, really. I hadn't been around long. And to be in those studios and working with those people, and we had such a laugh. And I remember we then went to the screening when it came out. They had a sort of cast and crew screening. And everyone was laughing away for the first 10 minutes, and then the laughter kind of died down a bit. And I feel that that, you know, about that film, it wasn't terribly good. First 20 minutes were all right, and it was just a bit dated by then, but I never regret doing it. I was quite good in it.
I think they were always going to have problems introducing new performers to the stable of stars who everybody got to know so well over so long, because they never to be their styles change. They're not the same people that you remember seeing.
David Benson.
And it's proof, I suppose, really, that a lot of the success of the Carry Ons depended upon those particular players who we think of as the real Carry On stars. Kenneth Williams, Charlie Hawtrey, Barbara Windsor, Sid James, of course, Bernard Breslau, Peter Butterworth, and all the others who, when you see a Carry On film, they're really the ones you want to see. So all these other people slightly get in the way and rather stand out, I think. And I think show that even in the later Carry On films, it was harder to replicate the real magic of the series at its height.
One star who didn't return for Columbus was series regular Bernard Breslau.
One part of me is sad because I enjoyed them so enormously. They're fond of huge memories and warm memories, all of them. So one part of me is sad, but really, I'm rather pleased that I wasn't, because it seems to me that to make a Carry On without some of the essential cardinal people was a mistake. I felt it was a mistake anyway. I mean, I know lots of people want them and look forward eagerly to seeing it, and I hope it's a huge success, but it's just, to me, a mistake to try to recapture. After all, I made the last one, I think, in 1972 or 73. Really? So I just think it's a mistake to try to recapture that. I think it's much better to leave us with the memories we have.
Well, I'm going to be controversial. I actually quite like Columbus. I think if you watch it now, particularly, again, with hindsight, at the time, there was a lot of wringing of hands saying, how dare they make a film without Kenneth Williams or Sid James or anybody? But, you know, they had before. And there was enough of the people left in 1992 to make a film which looked like a Carry On film. It was directed by Gerald Thomas. It was lit by Alan Hume, who did all the best ones in the 60s and 70s. It was written by Dave Freeman, who'd written Behind and a lot of the TV stuff. It starred Jim Dale. You know, it was a Carry On film. It had a great supporting cast: Jack Douglas, Bernard Cribbins, Leslie Phillips, Jim Whitfield, Peter Gilmore. It was made for, again, a small budget at the time, £2 million, as opposed to the Gerald Depardieu one, which cost about £65 million or something. So it felt right, in a way, and it still is like a Carry On film. It's a classic Carry On film look. If that had been made in 1972 with Sid James in the Jim Dale character, it would be like a, not a classic as such, but it would still be part of the canon.
In spite of being critically panned, Carry On Columbus made more money, relatively speaking, than the other two Columbus-inspired movies that were released that year. The title role for this relaunch had gone to early Carry On heartthrob Jim Dale.
First screen kiss, Jim Dale.
Anita Harris.
Lovely, lovely Jim. Talented Jim. He did all of his own stunts. So when you saw him riding down a corridor on that trolley, that was Jim doing it and falling off and doing all of those stunts. Brilliant.
And of course in America, the Carry-Ons have become a sort of cult film in America, but only to insomniacs. You know, at 4 a.m. you can watch the Carry On films, and I often meet sleepy-eyed people in the street saying, "Hey, man, you're that guy."
Jim Dale obviously was a stand-up comedian, born James Smith, then became a pop star in the 50s, the 6-5 special sort of era. And I think filled that missing link, as it were, for Carry On. They'd had people like Kenneth Connor and Bernard Cribbins playing the romantic leads, but Jim looked the part. He could have been James Bond, you know, he could have been El Cid or something. He just looked like an action hero, Jim. He's a good-looking bloke, and he could, you know, when he's hanging on that chandelier and Don't Lose Your Head, you really want to root for him. He's great. And only made a handful, only made, you know, 11... 10 in the early days, and left very early on, and left in 1969, Karen Again Doctor, to pursue other things, be it National Theatre and Broadway and all that stuff. They did try to replace him with people like Patrick Moore and Ian Lavender and people. They never could. You know, Jim Dale was unique.
The best plan would be for you to ride out there after dark and surprise them.
What, all by myself?
No, no, no. You've got to take a posse with you.
Why, don't they like cats?
A posse, not a pussy.
Since Columbus, though, the series seemed to have ended. Does this tell us something about how Britain has changed? Or are the film financiers out of touch with the movie-going public?
The Carry On series was of its time, and the Carry On series through the television is still of its time.
Early Carry On team member, Liz Fraser.
But you could not do a series like that now, because the whole British scene is different. There are no innuendos anymore. For instance, you were with Sid James in a broom cupboard, and there's a lot of noise, and there's the brooms going, and the noise is going, and hysterical laughter, and you would assume that they were up to naughty things in the broom cupboard. Today, they would have the door open.
It's a bit like trying to do a new Ealing comedy or a new Charlie Chaplin film. I mean, the time has passed. The Carry On films are charming because they are of their time and they reflect the humour of their time, but I don't think you can create a new one.
David Benson.
You have to call it something else, you know, but don't call it Carry On, because I think you're lumbering yourself with a lot of expectations.
But having said that, they have all these gross teenage films coming out of America.
John Antrobus.
Like the thing about Mary, what was that called? You know, there's some very funny films with sexual content and crudeness, which is quite amazing. And these are very popular with a teenage audience. But we don't seem to have that. We seem to have gone past it. Maybe Carry On exhausted it for the psyche of the British public for a generation.
When something is magical, it's because all the components came together at the same time. And that's when something really works. And the older I get, the more I realise that sometimes things are meant to be. I'm not sure that trying to recreate it with Carry On London or any of the others is a wise thing.
I spoke to the producer, Peter Rogers. He's passed away now.
Steve Gerrard.
And he said, we're very close to starting shooting soon. But it hasn't come forward since. And from about 1992, there's been constant rumours of a new movie circulating. The Carry-Ons have had their day. Leave them just rest in peace. It could be resurrected, especially when you see films like St. Trinian's being a box office success. But how many people now had ever seen the 1950s and 1960s St. Trinian's movies? Not many. They're not very repeated very often on the TV. The Carry On movies are repeated. People would probably say, oh, it's a Carry On movie. Let's go and see it. Hang on. It hasn't got Kenneth Williams. It's Sid James. The family is missing. And, of course, the humour now is different to the humour then. And as such, I think just leave it alone. Just finish with it. It's a lovely moment in time, perfectly capturing what was going on in Britain for those 20 years. It didn't work with Columbus. It probably won't work again, because the familiarity, the love, the amiable approach from the subjects to the audience and vice versa would be lost.
Of course, the Carry On brand has never really gone away. There have been numerous TV repeats and DVD releases.
I may as well have done the whole lot because I'm so associated with them. And this is not just because they were out in those, you know, that period. It's because they are repeated time and time again. They are cut up into slices, they are cut up into bits. I switch on my television and there's a list of everything that's on, and it's Carry On Screaming, Carry On This, Carry On That. So they're obviously, they are working. And what's the point in making another film that's exactly the same as the ones which are going on every day on the television?
Tell my squaw to fetch the peace pipe.
You'd care for a piece of pipe, wouldn't you?
Be glad to, Chief. Once talk peace with the Sioux, but you can't trust them. One minute it was peace on, the next peace off.
Oh, this is my new squaw, Kitty Cater. I bought her for 2 buffalo skins.
How? Never mind how. Where?
I was looking at one of the satellite channels the other day.
Steve Gerrard.
And it had, I think it was on the bank holiday weekend, a carry-on extravaganza. 10 films, or something along those lines, over the bank holiday weekend, over 2 or 3 days. Why? Because A, they're cheap to show. B, you don't have to pay much royalties for them, I suppose. But C, is that people regard them with a genuine fondness. Academic high art critics might not like them.
Ha! Serves them right!
Who cares about them? I don't. I'm more interested in the fact that they appeal to the working class, to the majority of people. The other day, I was in the university, in the University of Wales, Lampeter, where I'm based, and I was being interviewed by 5 or 6 very high up educational officials, and they were asking us as a group what our PhDs were on. Some people were talking about the archaeological projects, which sounded fantastic, and one of them was talking about Arabian culture through a particular manuscript. Wonderful. And they came to mine, and I almost embarrassingly said, oh, I'm looking at the Carry On films. And everyone in the room laughed, and I thought, well, either they're laughing at my subject and me, or they genuinely like the subject. And the spokeslady who was there said, wonderful, I love the Carry On films.
London's Barbican Centre, famous as the home of the Royal Shakespeare Company, is staging a production of a different kind. It's showing all the Carry On films ever made. The season, called Carry On Up the Barbican, is a tribute to what some film critics hail as classics of British comedy. Duncan Kennedy reports.
For the first time, all 30 films are to be shown again in a major retrospective at London's Barbican's Art Centre. Confirmation, say critics, that they've now reached cult status. In the 1970s, filmgoers started to find them too tame, and their popularity waned. Now, though, their appeal has come full circle, with audiences carrying on laughing all over.
Humour also lived on in TV shows like Are You Being Served? Or Hello, Hello.
At least you're here on time, Mrs. Slocum.
Time for what? There won't be any customers, you know, and what it's doing to my domestic arrangements. Having a bath at 6 o'clock in the morning played havoc with my pussy.
With Are You Being Served? Okay, it's a 1970s sitcom, but again, it's institutional based. It's at a department store.
Now, please, everybody.
Oh, come on, it's all tea.
Mrs. Slocum, uncover your bust, please.
Today, you have programmes such as, I would say, Absolutely Fabulous Maybe, Gimme Gimme Gimme. They're much more hard and much more vicious and nasty than the Carry-Ons. But again, they have the stereotypes that are in them. In a way, I suppose, Gavin and Stacey, the wonderful Welsh comedy Gavin and Stacey, plays upon these conventions. It's set in the real world, like the Carry-Ons often were. You have the caricatures, you have... Again, I think it works very well. The influence is there. Again, you could argue it's only there if you want it to be there, if you look for it to be there. But the Carry-On films, the TV series that they made as well in the 1970s, they were such a massive part of British culture that you cannot, I don't think, actually escape some influence from them, however indirect that might be.
So, with Carry-On stars and Carry-On humour percolating other shows, and with TV repeating the films, the future of the franchise seems to be assured.
Yes, we're huge, huge. I am all enormous. You ask anyone. You listen to this lot.
I did an interview with the BBC once, and the man said, what is the secret of the success of the Carry-Ons? I said, I've no idea. And that was the end of the interview. And I have no idea. I don't want to know. I don't drive the car with the bonnet up.
Hey, fellas, come here. Listen, dead confidential, this is.
Your fans
are
enormous. I mean, I get wonderful letters from people. It does become terribly difficult to keep it up.
Fenella Fielding and Carry On Screaming, lying on the chaise longue, saying, "Do you mind if I smoke?" Kenneth Williams.
Infamy, infamy, they've all got it in for me.
Frankie Howard, and you've got Sid James with his dirty little laugh.
That's me.
And you've got Hattie Jakes as well.
Personally, I think the Carry On films are amongst the greatest British films ever made. You have such a wonderful canon of British cinema: Lawrence of Arabia, The Lady Vanishes, My Beautiful Laundrette, even all these great British films. The Carry Ons lasted for 31 movies, more than the James Bond phenomena, more than any other.
All of the generations that have and still are enjoying it just makes me say thank you, thank you, thank you that I was a part of that, as that young thing that I was.
Ding dong. You're not wrong.
Wait, what? What, what?
Well, you can't sleep in those.
That's quite all right. I can take them off. You two ladies just turn your backs, please. Be good. Oh, wait a minute. Hey, what's going on? You can't... What a sauce. Nurse, please. Cool.
What a fuss about such a little thing.
Whoever wrote the script, you know, I thought they were brilliant.
Rude humour. That's about all, really. It says rude humour, and it said it just makes everybody laugh. It's innuendo all the way through.
They've become examples of great British filmmaking. You know, they're on stamps now, and they're on boxer shorts, and you can buy Kenneth Williams Toby jugs and nodding head dolls and poker chips, and it's just insane. I mean, it's the branding of Carry On is everywhere, so you can't move for Carry On. And I think, you know, if you're born English, you just have to accept it that you'll see at least one film a week of Carry On, because they're everywhere. I don't think it's going to go away.
Oh, hello.
I think it's nostalgia, isn't it, a lot of the time for our age group. You know, it's like over... Blah, blah, age.
I think they will survive us all. I think there will be a time when there won't be one living person left who they're watching on the screen.
I had a lovely letter from a super girl wanting me to go out and visit her. And she said, if you won't come over to where I live, which is in China, I'll come over and see you. That sort of thing is likely to happen. Amazing.
Tell me more about this Cleopatra. What's she like?
You have got to see her. Her hair is as black as ebony. Her face is like an ivory goddess. And her neck... it's like a swan.
Oh, yes, go on.
Her feet like sculptured marble.
Hey, don't leave out all the best bits.
I cannot tell you any more about this woman. She is absolute perfection. They call her the Siren of the Nile.
Oh, I hope she don't go off.
That was basically my first Palmer, Watson, do you know what I mean?
Whimsicality upon whimsicality. Will it never end?
It's all mud.
That's right. You were needy.
Right, and I kept saying, your feet are sinking in the mud. They said, Barbara, if we were looking at your feet, we wouldn't be employing you.
Oh!
They actually show how good it is to be British. However old-fashioned and un-PC that may sound these days, they mock Britishness in a nice way. They'll always be around. They will always be shown. Who can ever deny their rightful place alongside the works of David Lean, the early British Hitchcock movies? The Carry On films will always be around.
Well, that's about the size of it. What started as a single film back in the 1950s has become a British institution.
Young chickens may be soft and tender, but the older birds have more on them.
True. And take a lot more stuffing.
And so, the phrase carry-on humour has become a part of our language, and whatever different technologies come along to broadcast our entertainment in the future, you can be sure that somewhere in there will be the timeless adventures of Sid, Babs, Kenny and company as they carry on forever.
Is that it? What about me? I was a colt, I was. Tell them, you tell them how huge a colt I was.
Oh, do shut up. There's a good fellow.
Oh, any bold. You have been listening to Carry On Forever. It was presented by Leslie Phillips, with other voices provided by David Benson. It was written and produced by Phil Collins, and the executive producer was Ashley Byrne. It was a Made in Manchester production for BBC Radio 2. Oh!
Ha, 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 ha.